Stand up and speak out against domestic violence. Your voice is important. How are you going to stand up and speak out against domestic violence? El Refugio has invited strong men, leaders in our community, including Judge Ron Hall, Sheriff Raul Villanueva, Justin Cano, Jean Bustillos, Sam Lowen, George Zocca, and John Carter, among others, who have agreed to lift their voices in solidarity with El Refugio to raise awareness of what is happening in our own community. You can join these men and lift your voice and stand tall against domestic violence. Did you know that every 12 seconds a woman is beaten? The stories we read in newspapers are our sisters, our mothers, our friends, and partners. Listen to the voices of integrity and commitment tell stories about women, men, and children that have died at the hands of someone they loved.
Hello, my name is Ron Hall, and I have chosen to stand up against domestic violence today. First of all, I want to tell you a story that was given to me. It was a incident that happened in Silver City, New Mexico, a murder-suicide. Sunday, June the 19th, 2011. Victor Roman, 42, shot and killed his girlfriend, Trudy Huerta, 35, and then turned the gun on himself, according to the authorities. Silver City police were called to 4200 block of Kiva Place on a report of shots fired at 8:03 p.m. Upon arrival, the officers found Trudy lying on the ground in front of a building, number one at the complex, with a gunshot wound to the middle of her back. Two shell casings, what appeared to be shotgun rounds, were located just south of Trudy's body. Roman was found nearby sitting in a gold Honda with the engine running, slumped over the steering wheel with a shotgun wound to his face and a black shotgun resting across his chest. Both Trudy and Roman were pronounced dead at the scene by EMS. Silver City police said Trudy was attempting to stop Roman from taking their son from the apartment when the crime occurred. Five young children, ages 1, 9, 12, 14, and 17, were left behind without a mother. I was a police officer for 25 years and a judge for 16 years. Early on in my career, I remember this was before we had El Refugio or any kind of shelter. And there would be those cases that I would come in contact with when I was on duty that I would find a victim of domestic violence. And it was always the saddest of cases in my mind, in my heart, was to find these victims that either had no family, or like in many cases, the family had given up on her because she kept going back to this violator, or she had children or whatever. And then I would bring them home. I remember my wife, the first time I did it, she chewed me out pretty bad afterwards. And then from then on, every time I'd bring one home, well, Jane, my wife, she would take me in the back room and chew me out. Then, of course, as she always did, she'd take them back in the back and clean them up, fix them up, dry their eyes, get them something to eat, and fixed up. And this one night, and I had done this, and it really, you know, as a police officer, you get a little bit calloused. But this was really getting to me, why a person would keep coming back and taking this abuse. And it wasn't always physical. You know, sometimes mental abuse is much worse. It's harder to get over. Calling them filthy, terrible names in front of their kids, torturing their dogs, killing their dogs or their animals and their cats and stuff. But this one, for some reason, it may have been that night, it may have been I've been tired or whatever, or the person that I was dealing with, a little boy, I think he was around 3 years old, brought him home along with a mother, brought him back to our house. Of course, Jane took me in the back, chewed me out good, and then she went out with a smile on her face and helped him out. Got her cleaned up and everything because she had blood on her face. She still had scratches even after Jane fixed her up. The little boy was all puffy-eyed. He had been crying. It had been about a couple of 3 hours since the incident had happened. And she says, Ron, can I use your phone? I said, sure you can. So she dials up, and I'm sitting there at the dining room table while she, and I can still see it. The phone's on the wall. I'm sitting at the table. She dials up, and she says his name. Apparently he had already bonded out. And she called him and started apologizing. And I couldn't sleep that night. But I was lucky in that I had a good friend named Bonnie Maldonado. She was a doctor. She has her doctorate, and she's in counseling. And she worked at Western at the time. And so I wanted to understand what I had been seeing, because it had finally got to me and said, this is wrong, and we got to do something. We got to get them some kind of help, because I knew what she was going back into. The same abuse, physical, mental, and that same little boy was going through the same thing. And if I may, out of respect, Bonnie set me down and gave me a crash course of domestic battery. And from then on, I was an advocate. And from then on, I tried to understand more. Of course, back then, there wasn't the training that they have now. So I had to really research, and Bonnie gave me information stuff to try to understand. But I become an advocate. And then, of course, later we were lucky where Western was nice enough to turn over the basement of the learning center that they have now there on Silver Heights. Mm-hmm. And we begged, borrowed, and stole, I'm sure, some beds, some old, they were metal beds, and tried to make it look as homey as you can. It was just an open dormitory. And we started. And my wife, my kids, we got a beautiful board together, and a lot of people come on board then and helped us try to put this together. And then later, once I become a judge, I really saw an opportunity to make an impact, not only on the victims, because I would have been, I'd be in touch with them, but also the violators, and working with El Refugio and trying to have an impact on them and doing follow through. But I saw that there was another problem, because when I would go to the conferences, I would see that judges were indifferent. Judges had terrible concepts of what domestic battery was and what caused it. And so I realized that it was time for me to take a step then as a judge to try to educate the other judges about domestic battery. And I remember I traveled around, particularly the southern part of the state, had one up in Gallup, but most of it was in the southern part of the state, talking to other judges, and sometimes there was DAs and assistant DAs there and stuff, but mainly judges, talking about the dynamics of domestic battery. The biggest hurdle I had, and I heard it again the other day, out of form, about a person talking about domestic battery is caused by alcohol or by drugs. And it isn't. I mean, it may intensify it, but it has nothing to do with alcohol and nothing to do with drugs. And a lot of myths that are out there about it, and I think that's what perpetuates domestic battery, is the myths that are out there. And that's what El Refugio does such a wonderful job at, is trying to people to understand the truths and what the myths are. It's important for anyone dealing with domestic battery to understand what you're dealing with. The violators are good in what they do, and that's manipulation. They do it with the victims, and they do it with anyone they come in contact with, the police, and also the judges. One time I had this young man who had been in my court several times on traffic violations, and he always come in, and he was very friendly and everything. He'd come in by himself. And then one day he comes through the door. I didn't really know what the case was about. I just figured it was another traffic case. And he came in with a baby on his hip. He walked in, and shortly behind him came a woman with red eyes and another small child. And as he was walking up to the bench, because of my training, I already knew that in fact this guy was going to try to manipulate me. He was going to try to cause me to think that he in fact was a family man. And about that time, the clerk brought in the paperwork. Guess what? domestic battery. So as a community, we need to better understand the dynamics of domestic battery. We need to support those like El Refugio to combat this terrible thing that's happening in our community. Domestic battery, domestic violence reflects on the whole community. As a community, we all have to jump in and work on this. You know, here last week, this is, of course, Domestic Violence Month. This last week, there was a situation where the public was asked to come to the park and stand in silence for the victims of domestic battery. It was disheartening to see that just a small handful of people showed up. In my opinion, that park should have been full. You know, this is something that is very important to a community. It reflects on us as a whole. And so we just need to support the work that El Refugio and those volunteers are doing. Let's get involved in your community. Let's get involved in dealing with this terrible situation, domestic battery.
How many more lives will be lost to domestic violence? How do you feel listening to this story? What are you going to do? It is up to you and me to take a stand against abuse. You can stand up and speak out against domestic violence in our community to protect our sisters and brothers. You can help the police and judges bring justice to our community by insisting that people who abuse are not to be tolerated. Also, if you know anyone who needs to find safety from domestic violence, call El Refugio at 888-538-2125. We can provide you safety and counseling and help you find services you need to rebuild your life after domestic violence. You do not have to be a victim, but can survive and thrive. Also, check us out on the website at eridv.org to find out how you can be involved and be part of our healing. We must stand up and speak out to prevent these tragedies of domestic violence.